This is the state of things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao, in for Frank Stacio. Black landowners in the South avoided writing wills for generations. Instead, they relied on informal agreements to keep property in the family. But these heirs' property transfers have had devastating consequences. The USDA even says they're the leading cause of involuntary land loss for Black families. A new article from ProPublica explores why African Americans continue to lose their farmland and how this problem is hitting home, especially in North Carolina. Reporter Lizzie Presser homes in on the story of two brothers in Carteret County. They spent 8 years in jail for refusing to leave their family's land. Lizzie joins me now. Lizzie, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Anita.
Tell me about the Reels brothers, who they are, and what their relationship is to this piece of land in Carteret County.
I'd love to. So Melvin and LaCurtis Reels are two brothers in Carteret who live on a 65-acre tract that their great-grandfather bought in 1911, just when he was one generation removed from slavery. They've grown up on this land and lived on it all their lives, and Melvin in particular has created a local economy on that shore. So they live on the Intracoastal Waterway, and he became a very successful shrimper. And he brought in a ton of money to the area. It's the little area is called Merriman, where he was teaching the men in the neighborhood how to work the water, and he was paying women in the neighborhood how to prepare the catch. But what happened was their grandfather, Mitchell Reels, died without a will in 1970, and that's when a lot of their problems with ownership began. And for the past 40 years, they have been fighting a battle against the law, in many cases, to keep their property.
So they lost their property due to a series of loopholes related to it being heirs' property. And I want you to explain to us in the least legalese you can what what heirs' property is and how this impacted the Reels brothers.
So heirs' property is a kind of ownership where descendants inherit an interest in land. And it's kind of like holding stock in a company. So if there isn't a will, this is how land is passed down. And for many families, this has been how land has been passed down for generations. So you can have dozens or even hundreds of family members who co-own a piece of land. And it's an especially unstable form of ownership. And that operates at a number of levels. On the first level, you can't gain access to private financing often. You can't gain access to federal home improvement loans or certain USDA programs or even FEMA funding because you can't use your land as collateral. But then on the second level, which is probably the worst level, is that you're at a very high risk of losing your land. And in the piece, I describe a number of legal mechanisms whereby speculators can acquire your property, often at pennies on the dollar. And you'll see Black families. I watched families watch on as their land was sold on courthouse steps or forced into sales against their will.
So these families become vulnerable to losing their land because of this heir's property, which means that it was passed down, as you said. They inherited it, but there was no formal will. And almost 76% of African Americans don't have a will. Can you talk about this bigger problem and how it impacts the ability to pass on land?
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, what's really interesting about that 76% figure is it's twice the rate of white Americans who die without a will. And there's a long legacy of this, and it's very much a legacy of Jim Crow. So there was good reason for Black families to be suspicious of white Southern courts under Jim Crow. And many just decided to live with this kind of alternative form of land ownership where they were avoiding the courts. And as a result, what we see now are people who have inherited or continue to inherit heirs' property with very little recourse to fix it. So it's incredibly complex and expensive to clear title to property and to consolidate ownership. You have to track down every living heir. And there's been very little movement at the federal level and at state levels to fix that.
So there are also essentially ways that outside interests can kind of pit families against one another in ways that make them lose their land. Can you tell us about that and how it fits into the story of these brothers in particular?
Yeah, I'd love to. I think that's a really big part of the story. I mean, I would first want to just step back and say that when we're talking about heirs' property, we're not talking about a small problem. We're talking about a major problem. This is a third of Southern Black-owned lands. It's been estimated to be over 3.5 million acres worth more than $28 billion in the South. you were asking about, what were you asking? What, did I just miss your question?
No, you didn't. I think you were on your way to answering it. We were talking about how outside interests pit families against one another and how that can lead to land loss.
Right. So a lot of the time what ends up happening is that financial incentives are dangled in front of family members who no longer live on the property. So these can be relatives who live up north most of the time, who maybe haven't even stepped foot on the property or haven't been there in decades. And so when they realize that they can profit off of this land, they can sell a piece of it. So one of the most pernicious ways that we see this playing out is with partition actions. This is a law that allows speculators to buy off the interest of just a single heir, more often a few heirs. And once they've bought into kind of this co-ownership, they can go to the court and ask for a sale of the entire property. And they usually ask for that sale with this economic argument that the land can't be divided up and that it's much more valuable as a whole than in pieces, and they generally win. And what ends up happening is the people who live on the land or have the closest ties to the land have almost no way to protect their property. They have very few rights in most states. There is some reform that's been spreading across the South, but North Carolina has been a holdout and has refused to reform the system, even though it's been brought to the attention of the legislature many times since 2009. So with Melvin and LaCurtis's case, they had a distant uncle who lived in New Jersey, and he clearly saw a way that he was able to divide up the land and to carve out a piece for himself with an obscure law called Torrens. Torrens is an arcane law that really only exists in fewer than a dozen states, and North Carolina is still one of them. And all he really had to do was hire a lawyer, who the court then appointed, and then pay that lawyer, and to provide reasoning that he possessed the property through tenants, he said, who had rented the land from him or had operated a club that he had built on the shore. And the family just didn't really understand what was happening at the time and didn't understand that they were in the process of losing their land. And as a result, they missed the statute of limitations to appeal to Torrens, and they have lived fighting that for the past 40 years.
And the brothers have been fighting it and fighting it so much so they refused to leave their land and were charged with civil contempt, and then they spent 8 years in jail.
It's unbelievable, right?
So how was the local community affected by this happening and the brothers kind of putting their lives on the line to protect this land?
In a lot of ways, when the brothers went to jail, I think many members of the family saw it as a sacrifice for them, that they were risking their liberty to hold on to this historic property, and not just historic property, but really the source of their income and their wealth and their well-being, and also just the kind of the home base for an entire family that is spread across the country. Once they went to jail, though, the land that was then owned by a real estate investment firm, they couldn't access it. And that meant that a lot of the men who Melvin had taught to work on the water couldn't shrimp anymore and couldn't go crabbing. They couldn't feed their community. They also couldn't bring in the same kind of income that they did before. So one of their cousins had to take a job at Best Buy and sell his trawler, and he made $11.50 an hour, and he just couldn't live in Merriman anymore, and he ended up moving to Newport in North Carolina. And Melvin and LaCurtis's brother, Billy, took work fixing roofs, but he very quickly defaulted on his mortgage on Silver Dollar Road and had to move out. And so the devastation was certainly in money, but it was also in this kind of sense of place and family that they began to unravel.
So this conversation has really come to the fore in public consciousness through the hearings last month in the House of Representatives about the racial wealth gap and how the legacy of slavery contributes to this. What is the link between the trends that you're reporting on here and the racial wealth gap?
I mean, this is a major contributor to the racial wealth gap. A group of statisticians and economists recently calculated that lost land for African Americans has amounted to hundreds of billions of dollars in lost wealth. And what we're seeing is that the wealth gap is huge and growing, right? The median black family has about a tenth the wealth of a white one. And what I was hoping that this article would convey is this particular way in which the legacy of Jim Crow has lived on and we have turned a blind eye. I mean, this is a problem that very few people talk about, but it is enormous. And what we are continuing to see are laws that are stacked against heirs property owners and heirs property owners who are losing land at record rates. I mean, I saw some unbelievable court records, you know, families that lost their land to a partition sale that was started by PCS Phosphate, the largest phosphate mine in North Carolina. And they had testified that their ancestors had been enslaved on that property and that they had a family cemetery they didn't want to lose. And so it's not just wealth, right? It is also a sense of heritage and a disregard for that.
We don't have a lot of time left, but I want to talk about solutions. Is there anything that can be done to remedy this problem? What can an heir's property holder do to protect their family's property?
So there are two questions there, I think. One is for heirs property owners and one is for regular citizens. So for heirs property owners, they should write a will. They can make family trees and start to track down every single living descendant since the last deed holder. And they can also talk to lawyers about clearing their title and also consolidating ownership, like in an LLC. Those are some of the first steps that families should be thinking about. And then I think from a legislative perspective, there are experts who have started to put forth reforms. One of the biggest is the Uniform Partition of Heirs Property Act. And this is an act that expands the rights of heirs in partition action. So it gives them the rights to buy land first if someone is petitioning to sell it. And it also mandates that courts think not only about the economic value of land, but also how a family would be affected by losing it, like what an eviction might mean. So that's one. And then the other are transfer on death deeds. So this is a statute that allows family owners and heirs property owners to register in the deeds office how land is being passed down. And it allows them to a cheaper and easier process for clearing up who is the legal owner of the land.
All right. We're going to have to leave it there. Lizzie Presser is a reporter at ProPublica. Her recent piece on the Reels brothers is featured in ProPublica and The New Yorker. And there'll be a documentary on the topic that comes out this winter. Lizzie, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.